This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Your standard menu of summertime drive-in horrors would not be complete without the insidious threat posed this year by an infestation of blood-sucking creatures preparing to make their way into your home and yard and feast on you and your loved ones. Forget about the cicada emergence, people. We need to talk about attack of the ticks. It is not your imagination. Ticks are beyond plentiful in Michigan this year. And with us now is the Van Helsing to Tick Dracula, MSU entomologist Howard Russell. Howard, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, April. It's nice to be on your show.
So there is an absolutely horrifying picture in MLive of a cup of water that is in your house where you have collected ticks you have found inside the house. And this is not one or two ticks. Can you spell out for people who haven't seen the photo how many ticks you found this season inside?
Well, I haven't counted them, but I think there's probably 20 or so in there.
Oh.
Fortunately, though, we have not found any that were engorged or that actually had a blood meal. So these were just ticks that we climbed on us as we walked around the property or our dogs brought in.
Do you live in a wooded area?
I live in a swampy wooded area. I do. I have an old field that's gone back to wild, and I collected a number of ticks while working and splitting wood and stacking wood back there for the winter. We've been finding ticks since March, and I can't tell you how many people I've already spoke to this year that have said that, you know, they're a lot worse than they were last year. Of course, ticks have been increasing throughout the lower peninsula over the last, 10 or 15 years. And the sorry part of that story is I think they're going to be worse next year.
I think a lot of us just get completely creeped out by the fact that the way ticks feed is by drinking our blood. I mean, it's just a little unnerving to think about them lurking out there in the woods and fields. How crafty are ticks at finding openings to jump on and crawl between the folds in your clothing?
Well, they don't really jump, although when a tick is looking for a host, you know, they do what is called questing. So they'll climb up on vegetation. They'll spread their front arms apart or legs apart. And then as a host walks by, and then they sort of grab a hold and then generally climb up the host looking for some place to feed. And ticks are pretty sneaky. They actually anesthetize the bite site, so we don't really feel them. And they're not like a mosquito that goes in and takes a quick meal then leaves. They're really geared for a leisurely 5 or 6 day feed when they take our blood. They're pretty gross.
Yes, if you've ever caught them on day 4 or 5, you know how that goes.
You know, they go from something that looks like maybe 3/16 of an inch wide, kind of flat, and to something that looks like a small grape in about 6 days. That's pretty gross.
Ugh. What's your preferred method for removal?
If they're not attached, I just grab them with my fingers and throw them in my little tick cup. And if they are attached, where they had their mouth parts in you, you just want to grab them with right where they're attached to the skin with a pair of tweezers and pull them off.
No hot match to burn the little suckers off?
You know, I don't think you need a hot match. I think a pair of tweezers works pretty well. And then once you have them, of course, in the tweezers, then you can either, you can inspect them to see what kind they are. If they have white markings on their backs, then it's a dog tick and there's not much concern there for disease. And even deer ticks, if they don't have white markings, you know, it takes 48 hours for the Lyme disease pathogen to move through the gut of the tick and through their mouth parts and into the wound where they can infect you with the disease. So removing a tick prior to 48 hours greatly reduces your chances of getting Lyme disease.
Huh. You know, I think for some of us who maybe aren't as up on our entomology, it might be easy to confuse a tick and identify it quickly compared with, say, a small spider. And obviously, those can be very beneficial insects to have, or arthropods to have around in our houses. Do you have any advice for us on telling the difference?
And they are related, and they both have eight legs. Ticks tend to be flattened. Spiders tend to be kind of bulbous, but spiders aren't flattened like ticks are.
Howard Russell is an entomologist at Michigan State University. Howard, it's always nice to talk to you. Thank you for stopping by.
April, thanks for having me on. It's been my pleasure.
It's time for us to bury our mandibles deeper into tick lore and wisdom. And so we turn now to Jean Tsao. She's an associate professor in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife at Michigan State. Jean, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
So what can you tell us about what certainly seems to be a bit of a tick explosion in the Lower Peninsula this year?
Yeah, so this year it seems like that right now, normally in the spring, we usually have two species of ticks that we run into, the American dog tick, as well as the black-legged tick, also known as the deer tick. And it seems that this year we have greater numbers of the American dog tick, greater than we've seen in the past before. And the black-legged tick, which is usually out now too, it seems to be actually in numbers that are slightly lower now than in the past. But I don't think that means that there are fewer of them. I think it's because the black-legged ticks actually fed earlier this year. They did their thing over the winter and they're almost done. So the big boom we see right now is really the American dog tick.
Interesting. Are there ever ebbs or flows in the population change or patterns of migration over the years?
Well, these ticks, because they don't fly and such on their own, they basically, once they get to an area and there's good habitat, there's good hosts for them to feed on, they basically hunker down. And some years, there may be more than others because the weather conditions might be better for their survivorship, or the animals on which they feed may have had a better year. And I actually think, in talking to a few colleagues, because this has, this is not just Lower Michigan, it's other places in the eastern US too, I'm beginning to wonder if the reason why we're seeing so many dog ticks in particular is because the hosts that would have fed the juvenile stages, the teenage stages of the American dog tick, they may have been very abundant last year. And these would have voles, maybe chipmunks, ground squirrels, etc. And so their higher numbers combined with a more mild winter may have really helped feed a lot of those teenage nymphal stage ticks, then allowed them to overwinter and emerge, as, adults, just ready to go. And the warmer weather has allowed them to host seek, and the warmer weather has allowed us to be out now too. And so it's just this, combination of more ticks and more people bumping into each other to make this a big American dog tick year.
Do you think that we're likely to see more ticks in years to come? I mean, the sense that people have, maybe it is just that, like you say, that shift in when the species are out and about, but do you think it's likely we're going to continue to see a higher tick profile over the summers?
Yes, I think so. And that's because this American dog tick has always been around here in Michigan. It's been scattered throughout the Lower and Upper Peninsula, although I think in some places its numbers have increased as well. And certainly this year has been a really good year for the American dog tick. But the black-legged tick, which causes Lyme disease, has been emerging across southern Michigan, as well as across the UP too. I'm sorry, when I say southern Michigan, I mean the Lower Peninsula. And so it's over the last 20 years, every year, there are new sites being colonized by this black-legged tick. So because of that, its numbers are always going to be increasing. And so it's always going to become a bigger year for ticks. And then furthermore, we are really detecting the beginnings of the invasion of the Lone Star tick into Michigan as well. And they're coming in at least in southwestern Michigan. And so as their numbers increase, we're going to see more ticks in definitely the Lower Peninsula of Michigan, and eventually, potentially, also in the Upper Peninsula.
Jean, wait, stop. A Texan tick invading Michigan?
Well, it's a little misleading. It's we do think of Texas because of the name of the Lone Star, but it's because the adult female has this white dab of a little dot on her back. And so that's why we call it the Lone Star tick. But they are very prevalent in Texas, but all over southeastern U.S. And they've been moving north. They've been moving north into southern New England as well. And that's probably driven by climate change. And they're a little bit more susceptible to the winters as compared to the black-legged tick and the American dog tick, which are fine with these Michigan and New England winters.
Huh. I think when we start talking about tick bites, most people's brains go right to Lyme disease. But I gather that not all ticks carry the disease. How likely is it for a tick bite to be dangerous to us in this way?
Correct. So only the black-legged tick transmits the Lyme disease pathogen, and mainly it's the nymphal tick. And that tick really is becoming active now, and it will be active through early August. And about 20% of nymphal ticks are infected in those areas where the tick has really established. So if you go onto the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services website, you can see their Lyme disease risk map, and you'll see that the most at-risk counties are in the Lower Peninsula along the western side of the state, but have actually come over, creeped into southeastern Michigan, where you are, and also a few other counties along Lake Huron. So 20% of the nymphal ticks are infected in some of these more highly endemic areas for Lyme disease. And then about 40 to 50% of the adults are. But the adult ticks, because they're bigger, we see them. And so we see them before they're really able to bite and inject the pathogen. So it's really these small nymphs that are active now through early August that we have to watch out for. I know. And then so the dog tick doesn't transmit them. So although the dog ticks are out now, it's crazy. You know, they don't transmit the Lyme disease pathogen. They can transmit Rocky Mountain spotted fever pathogen, which is very bad. But Michigan, it's very rare for there to be a case of that. But I would say given the numbers of dog ticks this year, we should be on the lookout for that.
Right. That was my next question is, are there other serious reasons other than Lyme disease why we should be wary of tick bites and try to do some prevention?
Yes. And so for all these ticks, luckily, the prevention of tick bites is very similar. Basically, avoid risky habitats. And what that means is that if you're in the woods, you know, stay on the trails. And if you're in the fields, you know, where the American dog tick likes to hang out, try also to stick to the trails, because ticks, they are very prone to drying out. And so they hunker down in the vegetation, and then they peep out, you know, they perch to try to hang on to a passerby. So when you brush against the vegetation, that's how you can pick up a tick, whether it's a dog tick in a grassy area, or it's a black-legged tick or a Lone Star tick in a more wooded area.
You know, when you start poking around on the internet, there are any number of suggestions for topical applications to use as tick repellent. Do you know if natural solutions like essential oils are truly effective at keeping the ticks off?
No, I don't. And I don't think anyone really does, because you have to do research on those natural oils or those products formulations to really be able to know how effective they are. That's why the recommendation would be always to use an EPA registered repellent, because those have been tested. So perhaps these natural oils could work, but I wouldn't want to take a chance. And there are more natural options among the EPA registered products that one can use. So I think people can look there to see if there's one they prefer to use.
A lot of us who are dog and cat owners know the routine very well of buying products that you can apply to an animal's coat or a pill that you can feed them that wards off ticks for weeks or months. And the way it works is these products actually kill fleas and ticks that try to live on your pet's skin. Is there some reason why we haven't developed a product like this for humans?
You know, actually, I just read yesterday that someone is testing one of these products that have been tested and is being used with dogs, and they're going to have a clinical trial to test them on humans.
Amazing.
So, people will try. But yeah, so I think, you know, I think it's really valid to ask, you know, for that type of product. So hopefully we'll see some good results and there'll be more options in the future.
Is there anything that you wish was better understood about ticks?
Oh, there is so much, but so much about their ecology, because for instance, even because we don't have a vaccine for most, you know, for humans, we don't have any for the humans, you know, vaccines for any of the tick-borne pathogens here in the U.S. You know, one of the mainstays for trying to reduce a vector-borne disease would be to control the vector. And so we do know that if we were able to reduce deer populations to a really low level, then we could reduce Lyme disease risk. But yet that's oftentimes socially or economically, you know, just not feasible, politically not feasible. So if there were other ways that we could learn how to control a tick population, and researchers are working on these, and they're trying to attack the control of ticks as well as the transmission cycles through attacking the mice as well, the rodents. But if we just knew more about what naturally controlled tick populations and then somehow amplify that effect to really reduce their populations, then I think we could help reduce the risk, not just of Lyme disease, for instance, you know, if there was a Lyme disease vaccine, but we could reduce then the risk for many different pathogens that the Lyme disease tick transmits. And then furthermore, perhaps we could apply this technology to the other ticks that transmit other pathogens.
One last question, Jean. What can you say to convince me that I shouldn't just stay inside forever and observe nature safely from the other side of my window?
Well, I would say, of course, you know, the smells, the sounds, you know, experiencing nature, you know, firsthand is just much, I think studies have shown, just much better often for our mental health than staying inside. However, right, if people are very concerned about ticks, I understand how that could actually, you know, make it much more scary to be outside. But I would say that if you follow the recommendations, you already cut down your risk of acquiring these or contacting ticks and acquiring pathogens a lot. And then to do the thorough tick checks afterwards, you know, if we just remember to make some of these tick prevention behaviors just second nature, then they won't seem so odd or, you know, such a burden. And then maybe we'll feel much more in control and be able to enjoy just being out in nature.
Jean Tsao, PhD, is an associate professor and tick expert in MSU's Department of Fisheries and Wildlife. She's also a collaborator on the Tick App, which includes features like Tick 101 and tips on tick removal. Info you add to the app will help researchers like her track ticks in Michigan. Jean, thank you so much.
Thank you.